Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Networks on Saturday, June 18th, 2016. This is episode 1297. Enjoy. This episode of the Tech Guy is brought to you by Adobe Marketing Cloud, introducing Adobe's audio white papers for marketing. White papers read aloud to keep you up to date with the latest trends and technologies. Listen today by searching audio white papers for marketing on iTunes or visit adobe.com for more information. And by audible.com. To download the free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcasts.com/techguy. And by Wealthfront. Wealthfront is a low-cost automated investment service and the most sophisticated way to invest your money. Whether you've got millions or you're just starting out, visit wealthfront.com/techguy and sign up to get your free personalized investment portfolio. That's wealthfront.com/techguy. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones. I brought mine. Smartwatches, virtual reality headwear. So no one has yet called to ask about virtual reality headwear. I don't know if that's a telling statistic or not. Let me give you the phone number, 888-827-5536. That's toll free from anywhere in the U.S. and Canada. If you're outside that area and listening on the internet, and I know many of you do, and welcome and thank you. You can use Skype or some other voice over the internet program to reach us. Just, it's a toll-free number, shouldn't cost you anything. 8888-ASK-LEO. The website, good to know, is techguylabs.com. And I say that because everything you need to know is there. Not only the phone number, a link to our chat room, so you can be in the chat if you'd like. Lots of people in there, and it's always a fun way to kind of kibitz, be the kids in the back of the class. Did I say that right, Dr. Mom? Kibitz? TechGuyLabs.com. They even tell me if I pronounce something wrong. But that's okay. That's good. Because I'm more interested in being correct than being right, if that makes any sense. I want to make sure I say it correct. Give you the right information, right? 8888-ASK-LEO. Coming up in just a little bit, our home theater guru, about half an hour from now, Scott Wilkinson, talking about HDR. I'm sure we'll talk about the new Microsoft Xbox One S, which they say, I thought it stood for shrunk because it's 40% smaller than the current Xbox One, but it's not shrunk, it's second or something, superior, I don't know. But one of the things I found interesting is they've upgraded the Xbox One to support 4K and HDR, and it has one of those new Blu-ray UHD ultra high def players in there. So for $299, it is now the lowest cost Blu-ray UHD player out there by a couple hundred bucks. So that makes it a very interesting, and plus you get all the other, you know, the gaming and all that stuff. So that makes it very interesting. We'll talk to Scott about that and if it lives up to all those specs, if it would be an appropriate choice for that. This was a big week. I mean, not only did we have E3 and all the gaming news, including that Microsoft story, but Apple had its WWDC, its Worldwide Developers Conference. And it was really, all the announcements were really very developer-y, I guess, focused on developers. No new hardware. Just shows you how hard it is to predict. I should go through all the rumors that we heard in the weeks before. You hear me say it every time. Well, the rumor is, or take this with a grain of salt, because Apple's not announcing. And I hope I did that enough, because people were calling saying, well, should I get a laptop, an Apple laptop now? And I said, well, you should always wait till after the Apple announcements. We'd heard rumors there would be a new MacBook Pro with OLED, you know, organic LED function key row that was programmable. And we'd heard all sorts of crazy rumors about new Apple hardware, none of which came out. Even some of the rumors that seemed credible to me, like Apple completely updating iTunes. No, they didn't even mention iTunes. They did update Apple Music, as they said they would, but not by very much. Just a little tiny tweak here and there. The biggest change Apple announced from a consumer point of view was Apple's Messages platform. Sometimes we call it iMessages because Messages is so generic, but that's the name of it on the iPhone. And it's going to have all sorts of doohickeys. 3 times larger emojis, kids. Wow. Invisible ink that sparkles when you send the message to somebody and then they wipe their finger across it and they see it. They spent 20 minutes describing this new Messages program. What they didn't say, and maybe they just haven't announced it, is whether it'll work on anything but an iPhone, an iPad, or a Mac. I think it's Apple only, which kind of leaves the vast majority of users who aren't using Apple products kind of out in the cold. Okay, fine. They'll continue to use the cross-platform solutions. Facebook Messenger, is going to end up being the clear winner, I think, just because everybody can use it. Android, iOS, doesn't matter. It has big emojis and stickers and animated GIFs. And you know what? I bet you Facebook puts invisible ink in there, unless Apple patented it, and all the other features. But it can work. You can send this stuff from an iPhone to an Android phone or from an Android phone to an iPhone. There's no green bubbles being left out. There's group messaging and video calling and audio and pretty much all the features. And Facebook, of course, is not sitting back and letting Apple take over the world. I don't think they're too worried about it because they've added the capability of using Facebook Messenger without a Facebook account. That was the thing that I think held it back, right? Is, but I have to have a Facebook account. And there's some people who quite understandably don't want a Facebook account. But you can just use your phone number now, just like any text messaging program. And on Android anyway, it can replace your text messenger and send SMS, the carrier kind, the old-fashioned text messaging. So I look at what Facebook's doing and think, Apple, you're kind of playing catch-up to a race that you've already lost. There are, but, and here, this is the thing I think Apple has clearly doubled down on. I think they've decided, well, that's fine, because then if you use the Facebook program, you're giving Facebook your information. And at Apple, we feel like people will trust us more with their information, probably true. And Apple's even saying, and we're not going to collect information about you. They said several times, most of these artificial intelligence capabilities that Google's offering will be done on the phone only, won't exit outside your phone. So Apple's Photos, for instance, playing catch up with Google Photos, now will recognize faces and places and things. And they said, but they're very careful to say, but that's done on the device. That's not done on our servers. And then they've mentioned several times something called differential privacy, which is kind of like a magician saying abracadabra. Poof, your data is safe. Abracadabra. We're using differential privacy created in universities. Oh, well, that must be good. It's kind of a complex idea. And the devil's in the details, as many cryptographers have pointed out. It's a good idea. It's an interesting idea. I think I can explain it pretty simply, the idea is to be able to collect information about everything Apple users do without tying that information to any individual and thereby violating their privacy. So if you'd like to know how many people do this or that, you can find out without saying Leo did this or that. And that's, of course, would be very useful. Might even be more useful if they were willing to identify me as Google and Facebook are, because Google and Facebook can say things like, well, here's your trip to work, and we happen to know that you have a flight tomorrow, and things like that. Apparently, Apple says, well, we can do that too. We'll just do it on your phone, not on our servers, and we won't have that information. Here's how differential privacy works. It works to fuzz the information. So, for instance, let's say you wanted to ask a sensitive question of somebody. Have you ever been convicted of a crime? Of course, if you ask that in a questionnaire on the internet and somebody answers, now you can tie it directly to their identity. How do you do it without – how do you find out if a group of people have been convicted of a crime without finding out if any individual is? Well, here's what differential privacy does. It has two questions. First question, flip a coin. If it comes up heads, lie on the next question. If it comes up tails, tell the truth. Then, question two, have you been convicted of a crime? We can never know whether the person who's answered that question is telling the truth or lying, but we can know in aggregate. We can take the fuzzing out, the flipping of a coin, and find out in aggregate the total, you know, the percentage, pretty accurately. Sounds good in principle. Apple will probably not reveal how they're doing it, and really it can be done poorly or done well. So, well, you know, I think as usual, it has to come down to, do you trust Apple or not? And those who do will probably want to live in an Apple ecosystem, because Apple's very clearly showing all this great stuff. See, you have to own all Mac stuff to do it, which kind of bugs me a little bit, but I own all Mac stuff, so I guess I could do it. What do you think? 8888 Ask Leah. Let's talk. Just a little eatsy teensy weeny bit of it, a little bit of rock and roll. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo, the phone number. Kim Schaffer's here helping me, answering the telephonos. Hello,
yes.
Kim.
Good morning.
Good morning to you.
Well, ask and you shall receive.
Why? A call?
About
VR?
Yeah.
No.
Louisiana.
Unbelievable.
Probably because you brought it up and said you don't get any calls. Like
okay.
That.
Well, that's one way to get them, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Thank you, Kim. Let's say hi to Richard. Richard, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey,
welcome.
How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing great. Living the life in Louisiana.
Is it nice and warm in Louisiana these days?
It is so humid, I'm surprised we don't sound ill.
Oh, but I love, it's one of my favorite states. Great food, great people, great music. What more could you ask for?
Like I said, living the life. And I'm retired. I spent 27 years in the Army and retired, and I live here in Louisiana. The cost of living out here is so much lower than any place else in the world.
Another good reason to live there. Yeah, another good reason to live there. And you can go fishing.
Oh, yeah. I live on the lake.
Oh, man. Well, you probably don't need to worry about technology too much.
Not so much. I do enjoy it, though. I mean, I was going to ask about the virtual reality that Samsung's putting out, and I know that they'll never reach the quality of a ViewMaster as far as picture. But
actually, it's pretty close to a ViewMaster. So I have, with the Samsung Gear VR, which is pretty inexpensive, around $100. The key is you need a Samsung phone to put in there.
Right.
Now, of course, Samsung's a best-selling Android phone, so a lot of people do. I use it with my Galaxy S6 and S7.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of software. Now, it's kind of halfway to VR. By the way, this is powered by Oculus, which is the big VR company that Facebook owns. In fact, Oculus uses those Samsung screens in its own Oculus Rift. So you're getting a similar experience, but what you're missing is hand controllers. The Vive has that. And that means that it's really more of a look-around experience. Now, you can use, and Oculus Rift does this too, you can use a game controller. I would recommend getting one for your Android phone. And that'll give you a little bit broader range of things you can do. And there's some really fun games, including games you can play with other people. That's one of the drawbacks to VR is it's a very individual experience. You know, you wearing a VR helmet in a room look like a dork. You don't even really want anybody in the room with you. But this one of the games I really like called Keep Talking and No One Explodes. You put this on, you see a bomb that you need to defuse with lots of weird and wild controls, and everybody sitting around you doesn't see what you're seeing. But they have the manual that you need to defuse the bomb. And so it's a game of communication. You say, well, I'm seeing a red panel with a blue button, and what should I do? And they have to say, well, ask you some questions to figure out what to do. They read that in the manual. And meanwhile, the clock's ticking. So there's some. It's actually one of the most fun party games ever. There's also.
That sounds fun.
Yeah, it's really fun. And the nice thing about that is if you have a Galaxy phone already, that it's only $99. This is just a step up from Google's own Cardboard. By the way, that game is available for not only for this, but for Cardboard and for Oculus Rift. So you could, and I'm trying to remember if the Vive has it. No, I don't think so. Maybe it does. So you could play this with any VR, and that's a simple VR experience. It's not likely to make you queasy, and you're going to be less dorky because you're playing along with family and friends. Huh. But then there's things like movies. There's as a demo. They have a wonderful Cirque du Soleil performance, and you're looking around. Like there's performers all around you. So if you look behind you, there's a performers behind you, in front of you, and they're all doing different things. And it's a very immersive experience. That makes my wife a little queasy. Doesn't bother me too much. They rate these games by comfort level, and by which they mean if it's got a high discomfort rating, means if you're susceptible, not everybody is, to virtual reality nausea, that this might make you a little nauseated. So that's something to be aware of.
I'm an aircraft. It's not
all right. If you're a pilot, if you've flown, you know what that is, right? That sense of disorientation. So it's very similar, I'm told, to that. If you've ever used a simulator, flight simulator, for training, it's very similar to that as well. So I think you would like it. And this is easily if you already have a Galaxy, the best, least expensive way to get into it. Do you have a S5 or S6 or 7?
I have an S4. I know I'm going to have to upgrade.
You'll have to upgrade, yeah.
I'm to upgrade. I just am.
When I got the S7, this was a freebie. I don't know if they're still doing that, but it took them a few months to get it to me. But that this was, you know, buy an S7, get a Gear VR. I thought, that's a pretty good deal. I'll take that deal.
Yeah.
So it's
all right, well, I appreciate the information.
Yeah, thank you for calling. It's fun. It's not something I do every day. There is more content coming along that uses this. You know, so there's virtual reality. In which you are in a different reality and interacting with it. Games are like that. But there's also immersive video, immersive movies, 360-degree movies. That's more like the Cirque du Soleil thing, where you're not really interacting. You're just looking around. And not everything lends itself to that. You know, when filmmakers make a movie, one of the things a director does is guide your attention, point the camera at a person. You know, they cut so you could see who's talking, and then all the people, they are telling you what to look at. In virtual reality, you're in a room and you're not told what to look at. It's more like a play where you get to choose what you look at. So the creators of content have to kind of be aware of that. The New York Times has done some journalistic stuff as well. They did a very famous piece in which they distributed to all of their Sunday Times subscribers, over 1 million people, Google's Cardboard Viewer, which is a fairly inexpensive viewer, and allowed them to watch movies like a very dramatic one about the orphans of war. But it raises interesting journalistic questions, because when you're filming that way, you're either in the film, which I think is probably the right thing to do, or you do what the Times filmmakers did, which is, I guess, say, pay no attention to the camera or to us. We're going to leave now. Live your life. And I think that there's something a little bit not right about that, because you're kind of this is the hard thing, of course, about being a journalist. Your observation modifies people's behavior, doesn't it? People don't act normally when they're being watched or observed. And I think that to pretend you're not there, to leave the room, is to try to act like you're not influencing them, but you clearly are. And they've got a weird old camera in the middle of the room, too. So there's some interesting issues. But those are the two different kinds of VR. Now there's a third kind that's coming that I am most excited about, called augmented reality, where they mix the real world with the virtual world. So you're looking at your coffee table, but sitting on top of it is a Minecraft creation that you can interact with, enter, look around in, but you're still seeing the room around you. Microsoft's working on that. I think everybody's working on that. That takes a lot more computing power, so that's a little ways off. And by the way, that doesn't seem to make people as nauseous, which is good. Hey, home theater guru Scott Wilkinson coming up. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. And home theater guru Scott Wilkinson is here. And in the nick of time, hello, Scotty.
Hey, Leo.
You'll find his work on the AVS Forum, where he's the editor-in-chief. And, of course, his podcast, the Home Theater Geeks podcast, is on our Twit network, twit.tv/HTG, every Thursday. And you could download a new episode from that website every Thursday afternoon or evening after the show. Mm-hmm. So, and a good show this week. You talked to a composer who did your theme song. I think that's cool.
Yeah. It was very cool. Terrence Huntington is a composer. He's done quite a few films and short movies and stuff like that. And he volunteered to write a new theme song. And so it's now on the show. Very cinematic, very dramatic, really cool. So we talked about the process of composing for movies and the process of composing that particular theme song. He also has a really great home theater. So we talked about that as well. It's really fun.
So my real question today comes back to E3 and Microsoft's mm-hmm. announcement of the Xbox One S,
mm-hmm.
which is a 4K Xbox. Interesting. Because the other one was barely 720p.
But yeah, right.
But more importantly, it has a what appears to be a UHD Blu-ray disc inside.
UHD Blu-ray drive inside. That's what it looks like to me. Absolutely. And not only does it play Ultra HD Blu-rays at Ultra HD resolution, misnomer of to call it 4K, but everybody does anyway, but it also apparently supports or will support high dynamic range, which, as you know, is one of my favorite parts of UHD.
Pretty amazing. I mean, I'm not worried about 4K gaming because that's not actually going to happen until next year. I am very interested, though. I mean, this is going to start at $299.
Yeah,
the one I'm going to get is $399, which is late August.
1 terabyte.
Yeah, 2 terabytes, I think. But
two
anyway.
Terabytes. Oh, that's the special one. They're offering a sort of a special limited edition.
Yeah.
With 2 terabytes.
Already pre-ordered it. So
good for you.
Yeah.
Great. Man.
And Microsoft's not been clear about ship dates. They're saying end of August for the special edition, and maybe sometime later for the cheapest one. But you know, even if it comes in September. It's not like there's 100 Blu-ray UHD movies just waiting for me to play back.
Not too many yet.
So I'm willing to wait, and I don't have a TV. I don't have a TV to go with it. But so my real question is, but I'm thinking, oh, that might work out if I buy the TV in September, get the Xbox One S in September. Will I then? This is my question to you. Will that be as good as buying the Sony Blu-ray UHD player? Is it the same?
Samsung.
Okay. Same thing.
More or less, it should be equivalent. The Samsung does have 2 HDMI outputs, whereas the Xbox One, I believe, has only one. Only one.
Well, I don't know if that matters, right? I mean,
well, it probably doesn't matter to you.
It's going in my AV receiver anyway, right?
Right. But the reason to have 2 HDMI outputs is that if your AV receiver does not pass through the HDR or the 4K, if it's an older receiver, then you want to have an HDMI output that goes directly to your TV and another one that goes to your receiver for the audio.
So I need to buy a new receiver. That's
probably
what you're telling me. I need to buy a receiver. So older receivers don't pass through all of that information. You need a receiver that's UHD compatible as
Correct.
Well.
Correct. Nor do older receivers have this copy protection called HDCP 2.2.
Oh, it's got new copy protection.
Relatively new. Yeah, exactly. And so the receiver, every piece of gear in the chain from the source to the display and the receiver and everything has to have this copy protection or the signal won't get passed.
Even the cable has to be HDCP 2.2.
Well,
no, I'm not kidding. No, it does.
Really?
Yes.
I haven't heard that before.
The deal. They don't want you. The real reason for all of this is they don't want you to split that chain off and get a decoded signal and record it to a non-protected disk or drive. So they're really trying to keep that chain. This is all about anti-piracy, right? They all want to keep that chain completely pristine. All right.
You're right about that.
So to the best of your knowledge, and Microsoft isn't like, I mean, they're not handing out spec sheets, but...
No, the press release was very short on details.
Yeah. But it seems like this will be the lowest cost, especially at $299.
At $299, the Samsung player is $400. Philips announced that soon they will have their $400 UHD Blu-ray player out. Panasonic will have a Blu-ray player out. I've heard it's going to be more expensive because it's going to be kind of more of a premium product.
Yeah.
But for $299, for $300, the Microsoft Xbox One S, which I've heard stands for slim.
I think it's slim.
It will be the least expensive UHD Blu-ray player. Correct.
You know, and there's now, and there's precedent for that. That's one of the reasons I still own a PS3. That was the first inexpensive Blu-ray player.
Exactly.
And it had the advantage because there's a computer behind it of making it easily updated. It's always connected to the internet. I mean, it just seemed like the right way to go. And you get the gaming as kind of a...
And you get the gaming if you like gaming.
Yeah.
You know, and it would matter not to me, but...
Right. You might. You never know. There might be...
Well, maybe one of these sim types... games I might get into. I mean, I'm certainly not into shoot-em-ups in any way whatsoever.
No.
Now, another piece of confusion is that Microsoft also announced this thing called Project Scorpio.
Yeah, that's for next year.
That's for next year. Yeah. And I'm going, why are you even announcing that? It's going to just confuse everybody, particularly since the Xbox One S is an S, right? Maybe they think, maybe that's the Scorpio. No, it's not. That's going to come out the fall of next year. And it's going to be more powerful, an 8-core processor, have a lot of VR in it, and blah, blah, blah. So people should be aware that those are two different things.
Yeah, Microsoft doesn't currently have a VR headset, unlike, Oculus and Steam with Vive. There's no, and Sony's going to have a VR headset coming out with the next generation Sony gaming platform this fall.
Uh-huh.
Actually, I think it's supposed to work with the current generation. So it's Microsoft's a little bit behind on that one. So it makes sense that they would next year say, oh, yeah, we're going to do our VR thing.
Now, another question about the Xbox One S is whether or not it will send what's called the bitstream, the audio bitstream, and support Dolby Atmos, this immersive sound format, which places sounds above your head as well as around you in a surround format. That was unclear, not even mentioned really in the press release. We assume that it will because that's part of the spec of Ultra HD Blu-ray, is an Ultra HD Blu-ray player must be able to support that. But as
now,
I was
that wouldn't matter if you don't have an Atmos setup.
Correct. Okay. It wouldn't matter.
Okay.
But, AVS, I'm in the AVS world, and we're not in the mass market typically.
Yeah, I mean, I would love to have Atmos, and someday I probably will. So if I buy I have to buy a new AV receiver, I'll get one that has Atmos capability.
Correct.
Anyway, right?
Correct. That would be the thing to do.
Yeah. Because someday you may want sounds coming from over your head.
Well, if you've ever been to a theater that has it...
I know, I mock you. I'm just mocking
you. You mock me, but I keep wanting to get you into such a theater so you can really hear what it is, because it's really cool.
Okay. I promise before I buy anything, I'll go to a theater and I'll experience all of the above. You've said, though, and I think that I'm not misquoting you, that HDR itself is such a significant improvement.
Absolutely.
That if you can go to an HDR TV with HDR content...
Yep.
You will notice it and appreciate it. Yeah.
Yep. No question about it.
Well, this looks like, at least for this year, to be the way to go.
I can't wait to try one myself.
Yep. All right. Scott Wilkinson, Home Theater Geeks. His podcast is available at twit.tv/HTG. Thanks, Scott. We'll see you next week.
Leo
Laporte, the tech guy. Yeah, I have an NVIDIA Shield. Android TV box that just got upgraded for 4K, which is interesting. That was a software upgrade. I have no idea how to hook it up or anything. I guess I'm just going to get a new 4K AV receiver. Probably is the right way to go.
Yeah, I think that's the best thing. And they aren't that. I just did a Father's Day gift guide on AVS, and I included a couple of Denon AV receivers in the $500 range.
Yeah,
which do all this stuff.
Okay.
They do HDR, they do Atmos, they do, 4K, everything. In the less than $600 range.
Okay, that's good to
know. So it's not terribly expensive.
Yeah, I mean, I'm due. This Onkyo that I'm using in the den, which is where I'll put all this, is probably 4 or 5 years old.
Yeah.
It's probably, but I mean,
Father's Day one with the father and son stormtroopers. I love
awesome
that
image. That's awesome. That's really awesome. So I'll probably, because I'm going to, when I get the TV, I'll have to get a new AV receiver anyway. Should I wait?
No, I don't think there's any reason to wait.
Okay. So like these are the two Denons.
Right.
I have a Denon in the living room, which I've been very happy with.
Oh, yeah, they're great.
Yeah. The Onkyo's, maybe, arguably, I like the Onkyo even better, but
Well, I'm sure Onkyo, I should have looked something.
Yeah,
they'll have something in the same range with the same capabilities.
Yeah.
No question.
Yeah, they're very competitive. You like Denon better?
I think generally speaking, they probably have a slightly higher quality factor to them.
Yeah.
And the Onkyos, well, they used to have a reputation of the HDMI board burning out, but I think that's
never
that's
happened
long
to me.
Gone.
Never happened to me. Yeah. They have a very good DAC in them, so I like that. I can put a USB key in with my high definition audio, and it'll play it back.
Yeah, yeah.
But I'm
I'll have to look
nice.
Into that.
Look at this. This looks good.
Yeah, those two receivers are really quite good.
And the difference is wattage?
The real difference is the less expensive one actually has more it has 8 HDMI inputs and 2 outputs, as opposed to the slightly more expensive one that has 6 inputs and 1 output. But the slightly more expensive one has a 3-year warranty.
Oh, who cares?
So, you know, if you don't care about that, I'd
no, I want more inputs. More.
Yeah,
I don't even
exactly.
know if 8's going to be enough.
Well, the other, yeah, right.
one output is fine, but what would I need 2 HDMI outputs
for? Well, that's often used in a home theater where you have a projector for nighttime movie night.
Oh, yeah, yeah, and, I don't care
and
about
a,
that.
And a
yeah.
flat panel for daytime
yeah, yeah,
use.
I'm going to have a flat panel. Single TV.
So,
I do use the Xbox as a pass-through device, so I have my cable going into it. Mm-hmm. And then it passes through. So I have to look and see if the S will do that. I hope
what do you mean
that.
Your cable? You mean
I have the HDMI from my cable box, which is actually
the
TiVo, going into the Xbox, and then that goes from the Xbox into the AV receiver. If they've only got one HDMI out, that sounds to me like they've eliminated the pass through. That's fine. I can live with that.
Yeah, you can put the cable.
Just put the TiVo into the AV receiver. Yeah, the TV.
You have a cable box. Yeah, just put that into the AV receiver.
Yeah, right. Yeah. I don't need to. Exactly. It's just I was using the Xbox's media functionality, but it's pretty primitive. So maybe, you know what? And it's kind of a pain because every time the Xbox needs to get updated, I can't watch TV until it's done. So, you know, come to think of it, now that they've killed the DVR functionality, there's no reason for me to pass that through. All right. All yours, Scott. I've used up. Oh, never mind. I've used up all your time. So
that's okay. One quick thing, though. The other thing about the Denon with only 6 inputs is it has a slightly better room correction algorithm in it. So if you use the room,
they
correction
both use Odyssey, yeah.
They do, but one of them is multi EQ, and the other is multi EQ XT.
Oh,
and the XT is better.
Okay.
So
you stick around for the top.
Sure.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888, Ask Leo. That's the number, 888-827-5536. If you have a question, a comment, a suggestion, as long as it's got a chip in it, I'll talk about it. Dave in Wichita, Texas is next. Hi, Dave. Wichita Falls. Hi, Dave. Wichita Falls, Texas, right? Yeah. Did I press the button? I pressed the button.
You pressed the wrong one.
Did I press the wrong button? Okay. Hey, Dave.
Hello. How are you today?
I am well.
Me too.
Good. What can I do for you?
Well, I'm thinking about buying a new desktop, and I've checked a few out. And the one I think I like the most is a Dell XPS with Windows 10. Has 8 gigabytes of memory, 1 terabyte hard drive, Intel Core i7-4790 processor, up to 4 gigahertz, 6 USB 3s, and 4 USB 2s.
How much?
$550.
Jeez Louise. Man, that's a lot of hardware for very little money. What do you do with it?
Well, I watch you and download music and movies and burn them.
One question I have for you is that hard drive, the terabyte hard drive, is it a solid state drive or is it a spinning drive?
It did not say, and I did not really check.
Yeah. So here's what I would say. You don't need the i7 processors very, very fast, unless you probably don't need that much speed. If it were a question of price, I would say get an i5, which is identical in speed to the i7, just doesn't have as many hyper-threading cores, and then use that extra money, if money is an issue, to get an SSD. That single change will make a huge difference. You get plenty of RAM and everything like that. But the hard drive, you want it to be as fast as possible. An SSD makes a big difference. And now the good news is solid state drives have dropped so much in price that you could probably get something in that price range with a small, say, 128 gigabyte SSD and a terabyte spinning drive for your data. Right. That way you're going to have the apps, you're going to have all the applications and the operating system on the solid state drive. That's where you need the speed, and you can keep your data on a larger drive. You know, that's a very good way to, if you're getting a desktop, you have enough room to do that. I love the idea of having a fast, to save money, smaller SSD plus a huge extra drive for storage.
All right.
Okay.
Well, I've got some external hard drive.
Yeah, you could do that too. It's something about having it on the SATA bus that really makes a big difference. So, plus, for instance, you can use an imager to image the SSD, which is your boot drive, so that if anything goes wrong, it's very quick to get it back and running. I love separating data from operating system and applications. I mean, there's just a lot of reasons why this is a good way to go. But look, that would be the only thing. Otherwise, that's a great system at a great price. If it's an SSD, man, bingo is the name. That's great. All right?
One other quick thing. The last time I called, my brother had his computer worked on.
Uh-huh.
And he tried to get Windows 10, and he's asking for a serial number. Well, it turns out he went to Microsoft website to do it. And once he clicked on the little icon on his desktop, like, to upgrade, it went just fine.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, because so the only time that upgrade, it's activation is the issue, right? And if you haven't activated Windows 7 or 8.1, and you take advantage of the Windows 10 upgrade, it should just activate immediately.
Yeah,
the only reason it wouldn't is if you had an illegal copy of 7 or 8.1.
Yeah. Yeah.
Good. I'm glad to hear that.
That's what happened. That's what happened.
Yay. Right. Success.
Well, Leo, you're a great tech guy and a wonderful human being.
Well, thank you, David. I really appreciate it. Enjoy that new computer. You're going to love it. That's a lot of power and speed. $500, man. I can't believe it. Just we live in amazing times. Ketan in Walnut, California. Hey, Ketan. Oh, I'm pressing. You know what? Something's going on with this button. I have to figure out because I'm just pressing the regular button, but it's putting a. Anyway, hi, Ketan.
Hi there.
You don't need to hear about my troubles.
Thanks for taking my call, Leo.
Thanks for calling. I appreciate it. What can I do for you?
Okay, I have a unique situation. I have a retail restaurant store, quick service store, and I have a cell phone because there is no regular hardwired phone lines available there. And so my cell phone is my business phone, and when the employees are in the back room preparing food, they cannot hear the cell phone ringing because it's not loud enough. So I've tried a Bluetooth speaker, but it keeps coming on and off, cutting off. I was wondering if there's any kind of a hardwire speaker I can attach to the cell phone so anytime it rings, they can hear it in the back room.
Yeah, Bluetooth is, of course, the obvious way to do this. And I know what you mean because I have a Bluetooth speaker connected to my cell phone, and sometimes I have to wake it up and say repair. You want something that's
exactly.
Always been there,
exactly.
Yeah.
Every hour, I have to keep doing that.
Yeah, that's very frustrating. I think your best bet is to get what look like corded phones that are based on that are for cell phones. And they have base stations, and then they have satellite ones as well. And let me just see if I can find you one, because these work quite well. They act like, and I think for your employees, this would make them more at home, right? They could pick up the phone in the back, for instance.
Correct.
Cell phone cordless. I think Plantronics makes them. It's quite a few. VTech, that's the one I was probably thinking of. Yeah. So the VTech Connect to Cell cordless phone system. It looks just like, you know, the cordless system you're used to, where you have a base unit and you have satellite units. But it doesn't have a landline. It has a cell phone. It connects to the cell phone. And so, it could work with the landline and cell phone. I think that's probably the way most people use it. They want to have their cell phone ring their what looks like their landline as well as their corded phone. But you don't have to have a landline for this. So VTECH, it's called the Connect to Cell cordless phone system. And it's not expensive. It's $99. I would guess Amazon has something like that. Let me check the Amazon price for you. But this way, your employees will be more comfortable with it because it looks like they don't even have to know it's a cell, right?
Right.
They just think it's a cordless phone. Yeah, it looks like Amazon's still selling it. And, it's even less, $44 for two handsets and a base station, or one base station, one expandable one. So you'd have it in the back, in the kitchen,
right,
and you'd have it at the front. And you can expand it, of course, with additional headsets. You could even have a Bluetooth, so as you're wandering around the store or on the restaurant or the store, you could pick it up on the Bluetooth. These have gotten very inexpensive. Give that a try.
Fantastic.
Okay?
Great, thank you. I have one more question here, if you have a second for me.
Yeah.
I keep getting this automatic Microsoft update to Windows 7. One day I forgot to say no to it.
Oh, no.
Everything. I had to revert back to Windows 7.
Oh, I've got a solution for you. I have to do it quick because we're running out of time. Steve Gibson, just Google Never 10, N-A-V-E-R 10. It works. You'll never see that again. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Panasonic also makes a link to sell, which is the same idea. It's it's a little more expensive, but you know, I like these Panasonic phones. What you want is one that supports DTEC or DCET Detect. You want, but because that's the best cordless wireless system. This is pretty cool. So it links up to So basically, one cell phone up to five handsets. That's awesome. DECT, DECT. And I would guess that anything for Panasonic would include DECT. Yeah, here's the one, DECT. A lot more expensive. Wow, they really gouge you for that. Holy cow, $300 instead. Well, it definitely, you know, if you have a challenging radio environment, it makes a big difference. This is a bunch of handsets. Maybe it wouldn't be as expensive if we just got a couple. I think a lot of people are using these now because how few people, here's one that's $129, which is a base unit and a single external phone. How many people now have landlines anymore, right? So this is a great solution because basically pairs to your cell phone as if it were a landline and acts as if it were, you know, a landline. And they even have a range extender. This is what's nice about DECT. So this will give you even greater range. So you get out to the garage or the warehouse. It's a great idea. Let's see what the reviews are. You could sync up to four cell phones with this. That's nice. Wow. This even supports using Outlook to make a phone call. You know, I might get this for our house. That's great. Comes with a built-in answering machine. Not that anybody needs that, right? So, Ketan, this might be even a better one if you're willing to spend a little bit more. $129, the Panasonic KX-TG958-1B. Just search for Panasonic and link the number 2 cell. Oh, Scott, all yours.
Oh, thank you. I just wanted to quickly let you know, Leo, that I did a little research on some Onkyo receivers, and the lowest one that you'd want to consider is the TXNR555, lists for $599.
Oh.
So say it uses a different auto room correction than Odyssey. It uses a proprietary one called AccuEQ,
yeah,
which I don't really know how well it works.
Why do they do that?
It's got more power. It also has certainly 4K, HDR pass-through, HDCP 2.2, all the stuff you need. So that would be another option.
I'll go with Denon. If it's that much more expensive, I'll go with Denon.
Well, no, it's the same. It's $599.
Okay.
But you know,
like
Denon
Odyssey.
I've
been using Odyssey, and I'm very happy with that.
Exactly. Yeah. I think Onkyo used to use Odyssey.
They did. It's on my Onkyo. Yeah.
Well, they've since switched to proprietary.
Yeah.
And Denon, while it has less power, again, I think that they use higher quality components, generally speaking.
Okay.
So that's cool. My thought on that.
Cool.
So anyway, yeah, I've been talking to the chat room. Somebody here in the chat room, Web6404, looks like he wants to sell his Panasonic ST60 65-inch plasma. He's asking, is there a way to appraise it? And that's a tough one because it's a plasma, which kind of gives it some value, which he mentions, because you can't get them anymore. But it's 1080p, not 4K, doesn't do HDR. It is a smart TV, so it does have access to various streaming sources and so on. But like most electronics, it's just not going to hold its value. It's now, what, 3-4 years old? It's a fabulous TV. It was the best of value-oriented, budget-oriented plasma made, period. It was great. I know a lot of people who bought them. The only plasma that has really retained its value is the Pioneer Kuro. But again, you know, I have one. I probably won't sell it, but I don't use it much anymore. It's 1080p, no HDR. So that's a tough question. Battlecam is actually about to pull the trigger on an Onkyo, and I'm not going to say it's a bad choice. It's not. It's a great choice. I haven't looked at Onkyo receivers in a while, so it's a little tricky for me to make a full recommendation there. Yo David asked if Channelmaster DVR Plus would need to be updated to accept 4K over the air. The answer is I don't think it will be possible because 4K over the air, what is also known as ATSC 3.0, is an entirely different thing than ATSC 1.0, which is our current over-the-air standard for HD. ATSC 3.0 will be UHD or 4K, and it will have a lot of other features and functions, a lot. And so it's going to need all new hardware, I'm sure of it. So I don't think an update is going to work for that. Just letting you know. Sorry about that. Let's see. Any other questions I can answer here? Dreamscapes, good question. What is the ideal price point for a receiver? It's a very good question. I tend to say you need to spend at least $500. And what I'm seeing here recently, I'm going to up that to $600. If you can spend $600 on a receiver, that's not the ideal price point, but the minimum price point. You can go up from there to thousands of dollars. And what you'll get for that is more power, maybe more features. Certainly more features, probably better components, and so on and so forth. But I don't think you need to spend more than $600 on a receiver to get something really, really good. Let's see. Web 2153. I agree the Denon quality, but they have issues too. But they are my price, feature, value choice as well. Well, there you go. I did hear from a friend of mine. Who I had an extra Denon receiver, kind of an older one that I didn't need anymore. And so I let him have it. And he said that the user interface wasn't that great, that it was a little confusing to use. Okay, well, that may be. I will give you that. But, you know, in terms of performance, which is really my ultimate priority, it was just fine.
They all have terrible UIs.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. UJ, Finding Dora in Dolby Cinema was good. Yes, it was excellent. I just wrote about it yesterday on AVS, and boy, it looked good. Looked really, really good. And it's a good movie, too. I enjoyed it a lot. But it's only going to be in Dolby Cinema for a week, because what happens next Friday? Independence Day resurgence.
Oh, and that's gonna, boy.
I'm really looking forward to that.
Oh, boy. Well, hey, 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 how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time for a little tech talk, whether it's a computer or the internet or home theater. I'd love to talk to you about it. Digital photography, smartphones, smart watches. 8888-ASK-LEO, the number, 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. Let's talk. Give me a ring. We'll talk some high tech. Kind of, you know, been a tough week.
let's face it, and it'd be nice. We're just going to relax. We're going to just take it easy a little bit. I think the wasn't the moon in the Scorpio or June or something weird. Anyway, it feels like there was just was a lot of people are telling me difficult week last week, right? It's a weird week. So let's just we're going to relax, take care of ourselves, feel good, talk about something light but interesting. Tech's perfect for that, right? Things that are changing the world but really don't matter a whole lot in any sense. Big Apple's big WWDC conference. We'll talk a lot about that. Some significant announcements from Apple, although probably only interesting to super geeks. Apple has announced, and we'll see if this actually happens, that they're going to make a major change to their file system. Now, this will not be apparent to any user because the file system, which is currently HFS Plus, does that ring a bell? If you know what HFS Plus is, maybe this would interest you. If not, then I'll get through this quick and we can go on. Actually, there is a reason this might make a difference to everybody. It should be, if they do this, and it won't be till next year, will not be with the next version of macOS, which is codenamed Sierra. That'll be out in the fall. The next, maybe not even by next fall, but sometime maybe January, February, they'll start rolling this out. The new APFS, the new Apple file system, has some nice features that should make a difference to all of us. It should be more reliable. You know, right now, if you unplug a hard drive in the middle of writing to it, it's supposed to, you know, survive that. But in fact, a lot of hard drives don't. A lot of file systems are not super robust when it comes to, you know, catastrophic failure. The new one should be much more so. Much more so. It also, and this will be a huge benefit, has something called snapshots. This is a very advanced feature that until now has only been available on ZFS, which is a file system used on the Solaris operating system, used by kind of specialized big computers, big iron. The ability to kind of periodically remember what the drive looked like, save it off, in effect making image copies of the hard drive in the background, transparently, automatically, so that if there is a drive failure or you lose a file, it's easy to get back. This will make a very big difference. It's kind of like Apple's Time Machine, if you've ever used Time Machine. But it turns out, under the hood, I didn't really pay attention to this, but it's been known, under the hood, the way Apple's doing this is very ugly. Not very robust. This I knew. And probably, while it's a nice thing to have, and I certainly recommend Time Machine for people who don't understand backup and don't know what to do, at least turn that on. And I have it turned on my main machine at home. It's not my only form of backup by any means, but it's one way you can do it. And it does versioning and all that. But it's doing it, it's faking snapshots, basically. And the new Apple file system will do it right. So all of this, I think, is very good news. I'll tell you why I'm most excited about it. It means Apple's not giving up on desktop computing. And that's kind of a relief. I've been a little worried, to be honest. Apple abandoned its high-end, I think has abandoned its high-end users to some degree. It's what they call pro users. The Mac Pro hasn't been updated since 2013, or at least 2 years. It came out in 2014, so we'll give it 2 years at all. Not even any new hardware, no chip upgrades, nothing. They've done some beautiful iMacs, a 5K iMac, and of course their laptops were state-of-the-art when they were released, but they haven't been keeping those up to date. And I really felt like they maybe were paying too much attention to the big profit side of the business, the iPhone, and too little to Mac OS and the Mac laptops and desktops. But I think evidence is, thanks to some of the announcements at WWDC this week, that they do care. They should care because their programmers have to use it. Although another reason to be scared is they showed how you can learn, at least learn to program on an iPad. Their new programming language, Swift, which is pretty swift, is going to be, they're going to have a program called Swift Playground that'll be on the iPad that will be great. People write to me all the time, how do I get my kid's interested in computers, how do I get them programming? I got an email the other day from somebody with a 7-year-old. Who said she's really interested in computers and programming, and I'd like to kind of give her an entree into this. 7's pretty young,
But there are some really – but it turns out the iPad is actually a very good starting point for even kids as young as seven. There's a program called Tinker with a Y, T-Y-N-K-E-R, that can get you know, young kids started programming very simply. Some of you might remember in school, Turtle Graphics. Do you remember that? It was a brief fad. It really was computer programming. When was Turtle Graphics? The 80s? Maybe the 70s even. But you might remember in school having a little turtle with a pen in it, and you'd say, take two steps forward, turn left, and draw. You don't remember that, do you, Kim? Yeah, I think it was before your time even. And as old as you are, that's a long time. No, I'm kidding. It was after my time and before your time, somewhere in between there. It was an early attempt to get kids programming. Tinker is like that, but you can do it on an iPad and anybody. And it's a free to start. There are in-app purchases as you get more advanced. There's another great program called Lightbot, similar idea. But these programs can both take a kid from, you know, even as young as seven, from nothing to programming. And then Apple can take over. There's, you know, the Swift Playgrounds, which will be out with iOS 10 this fall. There's a program called Swifty I like a lot that's a kind of an intermediate step that you can take. If a kid wants to learn how computers work, there's a lot of options out there. Of course, great classes online, going all the way up to the high-end Stanford and MIT and Yale all offer computer programming courses for free on iTunes University. There's also, of course, Udacity and Coursera, these other big online learning facilities. There's Code Academy is dedicated to teaching people how to code. If you wanted to learn how to write computer software, boy, this would be a good time. I should point out that while not everyone should, I'm not in the group that says everybody should learn to code. But I think computer programming, coding and programming, by the way, same thing, just different words for the same thing, is a lot like math, like algebra. When you were studying algebra in high school, you probably said, as many of us did, when am I ever going to use this? All I need to do is balance my checkbook. You don't even need to do that anymore, do you? Well, but what you were learning, and I think the value of it, was learning how to think in a rigorous world and do proofs and logic and solve problems. And I think that is useful. And nowadays, I think learning how to code, write computer programming, has exactly the same value. So even if kids never learn to write software, some will. And boy, that would be a good skill to know these days. But even if you didn't, it would teach them to think rigorously, to solve problems, skills they would use everywhere. And boy, it never has been easier, with or without the help of your school. So to answer those many questions I get, if you have an iPad, there's some good, I'll have to look and see what's out there for Android. There's a lot of stuff on Apple. If you have an iPad, boy, there's just an endless solution. I'll have to look in what's out there for Android. I'm sure there's stuff. Google itself had a great thing called Android App Maker, I think it was called. MIT has taken that over. I've used that to write programs. And it's very easy, fast, very powerful, perfect for somebody learning. I'll give you a link to that in the show notes at techguylabs.com. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hey, I want to give a plug to Adobe's Marketing Cloud. They've done a podcast. This is a really interesting idea, and they asked to sponsor the show to let you know about it. They have done some great white papers for marketing at Adobe. If you're a marketing professional or a business owner and you want to stay up to date on the latest marketing trends and technologies, these white papers are really state-of-the-art, the best. And they've just recorded them as a podcast. So you can now listen to the audio white papers for marketing, which is, I think, for a lot of us working stiffs, the ability to listen to these in the car gives you kind of a head start on your day. By the way, Malcolm McDowell, what a picture of Malcolm McDowell, but he's one of the narrators. These are really good narrators. They're on iTunes. You can get it's the first ever non-music playlist on Spotify. You can get them on SoundCloud. You want to search for Adobe Marketing Cloud White Papers for Marketing, audio white papers for marketing. You can subscribe on iTunes and get all nine of them. This is such a great idea because, like I said, you know, you may not have time to read these, but now you can listen to them in the car. Let's open iTunes here and just play it a little bit. Malcolm McDowell, isn't that hysterical? Creating a 360-degree view of here's some of the things you're going to learn. How to the difference between interaction metrics, engagement metrics, value metrics to figure out which of your creative works, creating personalized content that's relevant to customers and using predictive analytics to figure that out, creating a 360-degree view of each customer, no matter where they're interacting with your brand. This is so cool. It's on iTunes. Just search for Audio White Papers for Marketing on iTunes to gain great insights into the latest marketing trends. And I think they're kind of fun to listen to, too. Audio White Papers for Marketing from Adobe, and we do thank Adobe Marketing Cloud for their support. That's awesome.
With the support of a strong web content management foundation, one that's built on extensible open standards,
I recognize his voice.
Modern best practices. According to a recent Forrester,
this guy reads a lot of Audible
web
books.
Web content management.
He's
is
one
the
of my favorites. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888. Ask Leo, app inventor. That's what I was trying to remember. The Google created this as an easy way for young people or anybody without professional programming skill to create a program for Android. It's very easy to use. They didn't want to maintain the project. They passed it off to MIT. MIT runs it now and does a very good job. And if you Google App Inventor, you can go right there and start writing software right away. It's kind of cool. It's very powerful, and it allows you to write Android apps without any prior experience or skill, which I think is kind of the goal, isn't it? To teach you how to think logically and to create stuff. And boy, there's for kids especially, but anybody, the sense that you've done something that you can then use and you've actually created something, even if it's just software, it's not physical. I mean, physical's cool too. Look, Mom, I built a birdhouse is fantastic, but this is the equivalent of it in the digital domain. Look, Mom, I built a calculator. It's pretty cool. There are lots of tutorials out there that would get any kid started. So that's probably the best choice for Android. Luis El Monte, California is next. Hi, Luis. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo. How you doing?
I'm great. How are you?
All right. Don't feel bad. I'm an old guy, too. So don't feel bad.
You know, I'll tell you, there's good things and bad things about getting old, but it sure beats the alternative. So
tell me about it.
I'll take it.
Listen, I don't have a heavy knowledge of computers, but I needed to know two things very quickly. I have a friend of mine gave me an external hard drive, and it has like over 100 movies on it. I'm an old movie fan, and
nice.
I have a Mac computer.
Yeah,
I can play it on my Mac computer, but I have a couple of friends who are movie fans too, old movie fans, but I gave them the external hard drive, but they don't have a Mac computer, so it doesn't work on their computer.
So there's a couple of possibilities. Can they actually see the contents of the drive?
No.
No.
It comes up on their computer, but on mine, no, they can't see. They can see that it's there, but they can't open it, basically.
Okay, so there's two problems, potentially. One, I was talking about this at the beginning of the hour, file systems. Apple uses HFS, Windows uses NTFS, and Apple doesn't talk Windows, and Windows doesn't talk Apple. So if the person who made that hard drive was using a Mac, was he?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
And he formatted that with the Mac formatting. The Windows people won't be able to open the drive at all. They'll see a drive, but if they double-click it, it'll say, I can't read this drive. What do you want me to do? Do you want me to format it? And you should say no, obviously, because okay. That'll erase it. So there's a couple of solutions to this. The best, probably, if you've got the time and the space, would be for you to copy those movies off of that hard drive. Excuse me. Copy those movies off that hard drive and reformat it. You can use this, the disk utility that comes with your Mac. It's in Applications Utility. utilities. Excuse me, I got something caught in my throat. There we go. And copy them off, reformatting in FAT. F-A-T. That is a standard format. FAT is used by Windows. Apples can read FAT. Windows can read FAT. Everybody, just remember, FAT and happy.
Okay.
So if it's FAT and then you copy all the files back, everybody can read it.
Okay.
So what you'll so if you've got the space to store them all, do you have enough hard drive to store them all?
Not on my actual computer. No, that's why I have external. Yeah.
So that would be the trick. There is software that they can download that will give Windows the capability of reading an Apple disk, but that maybe isn't best for your less sophisticated friends.
Yeah. Now, can I download the movies and burn them onto a
you could.
DVD?
Sure.
And could they play that DVD on there?
You bet. The DVD file format is compatible with everything.
Okay.
So but it's easy. You know. Here's another way to do it. Oh, I got a great idea.
Okay.
I got a great idea. Let's get a second hard drive. They're cheap now.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right? Get a second hard drive of the same capacity. If you buy it at any store, it'll become FAT formatted because that way they know everybody can read it. So you won't have to do anything. Just copy, plug it in and your movie disc in and copy the movies over to that drive, then give them that drive.
Okay.
You see what I'm saying? They'll be able to read that drive. So if you go to the big box store and get a terabyte drive for $49.
Okay.
And just plug it in and have both drives plugged into your Mac and then just drag the movies from the existing drive over to the terabyte. You're doing a couple of things. One, you're backing it up, which you probably should do.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And two, you're making a copy that they should be able to read.
Okay. All righty. So just to be So buy an external hard drive.
Almost, it's very rare that when you buy an external hard drive, it's not FAT, because they want to make sure it'll work. Even if you're buying it with a Mac or a Windows PC, so unless it specifically says for Macintosh, you're okay.
And then plug that into the Mac.
Mm-hmm.
And then plug the other one into the computer
and drag the movies from the old one to the new one.
Okay.
Now there's one more thing that you might want to pay attention to, and that is the file format. It might be in a file format like .mov that Macs can read easily, but Windows machines can't. But that's easy to solve. There's a program that everybody in Windows and Mac should have called VLC that will play any format.
Okay.
So if they say, well, I can see the file, but when I double-click it, my Windows machine says, what do you want me to do with it? Tell them, download VLC. It's free from videolan.org, videolan.org.
Videoland.org,
VLC player, and that opens up any file format and plays it on Windows.
Okay.
VLC is a useful tool. That's only if they can't play it with whatever they've got. They may not. There may not be an issue. I don't know what format these movies are in.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. Yeah, they look pretty good, and all right. You've been very, very helpful, sir. Thank you very, very much, and have a happy Father's Day.
Well, happy Father's Day to you, too. Thank you so much for your call. I appreciate it. I forgot Father's Day tomorrow, right? I'm proud to say I'm a good son this year. I can't say it every year. Visited with my dad. I gave him, do you see that globe? Isn't that cool? So I found online, you know what? Sometimes online ads work. I saw this ad for like a company that makes a globe that rotates.
I still can't figure out how that thing isn't touching any of the sides.
It's floating in, it looks like a giant Lucite cube, not giant, but like 6 by 6 inches. And then, so first of all, it's floating precisely in the middle, which does seem
it defies
hard to believe.
Science.
And then it also, when the light hits it, it rotates automatically. So it's just the whole world rotating. Anyway, I thought that was a good Father's Day gift. I'm tooting my own horn because for once I actually did it. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. He's been everywhere, man. He's Johnny Jett, our peripatetic world traveler. This is the song that put Winnemucca on the map, my friends. Hey, Johnny. I saw a picture of the volleyball net on Manhattan Beach, and I'm thinking you must be home.
I'm home in California. Not for long. I leave tomorrow. I go away for a few days.
Are you bringing Natalie, your
yeah,
expecting
actually, we're going to
wife?
We're going to a conference.
Oh, fun.
And so it should be a good one.
So fun.
And we're escaping the heat. I thought we were going to the heat. But actually, I looked at the forecast. It's going to be vice versa where we're going.
Isn't it going to be a heat wave next week?
110 in L.A. on Monday, supposedly.
Now, I guess we've picked this week to go to Newport Beach for vacation. I guess it's not going to be as warm there.
No, Newport will be warm.
Okay. Because I looked at the weather forecast. Maybe they just haven't gotten the word yet.
Well,
so we should pack shorts is what you're saying.
I'm not a meteorologist, but I would definitely pack shorts.
Yeah, I hear it's going to be very, very hot. We're up in Northern California where it's a little bit cooler. But yeah, we thought it'd be fun. We're going to ride around the Duffy boats. We're staying at the Pelican up on the hill.
Oh, Pelican Hill. Nice.
Yeah.
You're living large there.
Yeah, well, we're bringing me and Lisa, her son, and then another kid. So we needed a larger little villa to spread out in.
You will love it.
Can't wait.
I was up in Alaska last weekend where I called in, and it was not that warm.
Yeah.
So,
but that's why people go in the summer, because it's cool.
Yes.
Where you don't want to go in the Northern Hemisphere summer is Antarctica, because it's the dead of winter. And I understand
exactly.
There's two of
you can't even get down there.
Two of the scientists down there have fallen ill, and they're actually going to fly a rescue flight, which they haven't done in years, and they don't like doing. It's very, very dangerous. In to get them out. We'll have to keep an eye on how that's going.
Yeah. I didn't hear that, so I'll take a
just
look.
Just broke yesterday. Anyway, let's talk about good travel news. What do you
got? Let's talk about good travel. So here's a tip for everybody. Hotels are now putting in these non-refundable rooms to book, or you have to cancel, 24 hours within a few days in advance. Well, there's a website for people who buy non-refundable rooms but can't use them for some reason. So you can put your room on there. It's kind of like StubHub, but for a hotel room. So it's called Rumor Travel.
You could resell. Well, now, how do the hotels feel about that?
I guess they're okay with it, because these guys act just like – it's just like going to Expedia or somewhere else. And they also have every different hotel room as Expedia would. So you can just go on as a customer and buy whatever you want. But the rooms that people are reselling, you'll get for cheaper than you would find on the traditional – online travel agents sites like
worries me in the ticket world. What's happened as a result of sites like StubHub, the reseller sites, is that a lot of times they buy up all the seats before
like Hamilton.
This is apparently where it's what's happening in Hamilton, and then resell them at an exorbitant price, which means you can't get tickets except going through these resellers. I hope that doesn't happen with hotel rooms where they're all booked up all the time.
No, I don't think it will. Because they're not as the demand as
I guess
Hamilton,
you're right.
Which you're lucky to see that.
Yeah.
I was looking to go to see Hamilton. They're $1,500 right now.
Well, his
he's leaving July 9th.
Lin-Manuel Miranda, who wrote it and stars in it, is leaving July 9th. The ticket for the second row for that performance, I understand, is $10,000 on one of the resale sites.
But the problem is these guys are not getting it. None of the actors are getting it, or the theater.
The resale sites. They're bought them at face value, and they're selling them at this huge inflated price. I confess, I'm probably sustained that a little bit by buying tickets off one of those sites for Hamilton. It was the only way we could go see it. I'm glad I did. It was expensive. It was like $1,000 a seat, but it was sure worth it.
I haven't had the pleasure to see it, but last night I went to the Dodgers game and we got the tickets actually from StubHub. And one of my buddies uses StubHub all the time, and he was like, the trick is to buy it last minute,
right? Because the price goes down. Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah.
So the same thing with Rumor Travel. But one tip, by the way, to get out of this is that, let's say you do book a non-refundable hotel room and you need to cancel 3 days in advance, and it's 2 days before you find out you can't go. What you can do is you call the hotel up and say, hey, I have a change of plans. I'm not going to be able to make this meeting this week. Can I change it to next week? It's not the most, what's the word I'm looking for? The most
ethical.
Respectable. Ethical.
Ethical
Thank
would
you.
be the
Thank
word.
You. Thing to do. But They will then let you change it to the week later or a month later or whatever, and then you call back a few hours later or a few days later and cancel it.
I understand. That's terrible, by the way. Don't do that. Because you understand that you put yourself in the position of the hotelier. This person can't resell that room at a short notice, right? So that room flies empty.
I would only do that on the big major chains that are, imposing this. I would never do it on a boutique hotel or something like that.
Yeah, that would
I wouldn't
be
do
mean.
It, period. But if I was going to
I would never do such a thing.
But so my alternative to that is Rumor Travel, to check it out.
Spell it for us.
R-O-O-M-E-R.
Got it.
Travel.com.
Like a room.
Exactly.
Because you're a roomer. You live in a room. That's, exactly. And the hotels don't mind because at least they get that room covered.
Well, these guys are just reselling it. I have no idea how they do it, but they take 15% if your room does get sold.
Right.
And they hold the money for 10 days until after the person checks out.
Well, you can't have my room at the Pelican Hill because I'm leaving tomorrow. I don't care what happens.
if you're leaving tomorrow, you definitely should be bringing your shorts.
Yeah, I'm leaving. We're spending next week in Newport Beach.
I got you.
Anyway, okay. So
I got an app.
Yes.
You have time.
Yes, we do.
So it's called My Flight. MIFLIGHT. So you can use this tomorrow when you're flying. Are you driving?
No, we're driving because it turns out, given the wait time and the long lines of the TSA, et cetera, sorry, you're not getting my airfare. We're going to drive. There's four of us. It's more economical, and I bet it doesn't take any longer.
Well, I agree with you there. But so this website will help people who are flying that will be able to measure the TSA security lines, how long they'll be.
Oh,
the TSA has their own called MyTSA and their app and their website, but they're not very accurate. And actually, one of the guys from the Today Show did a trial a week ago and, showed that the TSA one was so off. And one of the ones that he mentioned.
Isn't it sad when you can't trust the TSA?
Yeah, that's a problem. It is sad.
Okay, so my MI flight, I would bring both. Get the TSA app and the My Flight app, and whichever line is longest, that's the one you should assume is correct.
Well, this will tell you. So, by the way, the lines are gotten a lot better.
I think they probably.
I think it scared a lot of people. I still get emails about it.
Well, that's why we're not flying. Hello.
Yeah, I know. So you're a perfect example. So
that's four tickets that the airlines did not sell because. I don't want to trust the TSA.
Right. Well, I've been in so many airports in the last few weeks, and
the lines are
gotten way better. And again, TSA PreCheck will definitely help you even more. But
one of these days I'm going to get around to getting that global thing that you recommend.
Global entry, got to do that. And actually, you're in San Francisco, so you should get Clear, which is like TSA.
No, I had Clear, and that's embarrassing. Maybe they've changed it.
Because they walk you right to the front of the line.
They walk you to the front of the line. The one time I used it, like they took my bags, they took my thing, they got put in a tray like the regular tray, and they go, out of the way, Leo's coming, and some poor mother with her kid in a stroller, out of the way, Leo's in front of you. I'm never doing that again. That is rude.
I don't have Clear.
How
because
rude.
They're not in L.A., but they're in San Francisco and Orlando.
No,
and Vegas.
I never use them again. Maybe they don't do that anymore, but boy, that was terrible.
No, they still walk people to the front of the line.
They went out of business because of that. Then somebody else bought them and put them back in business.
Yeah.
No, no, that's rude. I'm not going to – it was personally embarrassing. I'm so sorry. I bought this thing and they're moving me in front of you, and I'm really sorry. Talk about conspicuous consumption. Thank you, Johnny. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Now we ran out of time today. I'll give you your plug when we come back. I'm sorry.
Well, that's okay. I don't worry about it.
I felt terrible. That's why I didn't. I never renewed Clear. And you have to, same process. You have to get the iris print and all that crap. But then all they do is elbow their way in front of the line. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I didn't give Johnny Jett his plug. You got to follow Johnny Jett. He's on Twitter. He's on Instagram. And the best way to find out what he's up to, johnnyjett.com. That's his website. Free newsletters there, a bunch of them, with travel fare alerts, when there's a great fare. It's if you like to travel, even if it's just vicariously, johnnyjett.com. Back to the phones we go. Greg is on the line from Glendora, California. Hi, Greg. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo, how you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
Oh, I'm okay. My Note 4 is sick.
It's
rebooting for no reason.
Uh-oh. Rebooting is the same thing as a blue screen of death.
Uh-oh.
So it could be software, but almost always it's a hardware problem. The first thing there, if you called your carrier or Samsung, the first thing they'd tell you to do is to go into backup and reset it to the factory state, do a factory reset. That would you already did that?
Uh-huh.
That eliminates the software problem. It's still doing it?
Yep, still doing it.
Then it's a hardware problem. Now, it could be something as silly as like a stuck on-off button, but it's much more likely a memory problem or a storage issue or a motherboard problem, not something, in other words, you could fix. Out of warranty. It's 2 years old now, right? Almost.
I'm right around 17 months right
now.
Yeah.
You mean you could try bringing it, but who'd you get it from?
Sprint.
You know, Sprint wants to keep you as a customer.
I
would hope so, because you send them a check every month. That's the kind of customer they like. So you might try bringing it to the Sprint store, showing them. They may, just to keep you as a customer, replace it. What you'd really love them to do is say, hey, what about a Note 5 and you only give us $50? And I think that's what you should lobby for is some sort, you know, it's out of warranty. It probably had at best a 1 year warranty. So it's out of warranty. It's definitely a hardware issue. It's failed. Nothing, you know, you did the one thing that they would tell you to do, which is restore it, reset it. I think you're going to have to bring it back. I'm sorry to say.
Oh my God. Okay. I guess I did.
Now, if you could, you know, if you could just hold on, because the new Note 6 comes out in a couple of months. We don't know exactly when, but the rumor is they're going to release it earlier than they released the Note 5 last year, which would make it literally next month or in August. But can you wait? I'm rebooting phone. How often does it reboot?
Well, I normally use it as a radio when I'm at work.
Oh, you don't really care then?
And no, I can still use it. I'm using it right now, surprisingly.
Oh, all right. Well, I think Sprint, you know, because they know the new 6 is coming out, the 5 is less valuable. If they have some 4s in stock, they might just swap it for you. If they don't, which they probably don't at this point, it would be nice if they would say, hey, for $50, we'll give you a Note 5, but you got to renew your, you know, deal with us for 2 years, something like that.
Yeah, but I still got like 7 months before.
I know. All I can say is I don't think there's any user serviceable parts in there. I think you're out of luck.
Okay.
You just got to make the best deal you can with the carrier. But remember, everybody should remember this. When you pay somebody every month, they're strongly incented to keep you happy. Whether it's your cable company, your internet service provider, your phone company, they like those monthly checks. They really do. And in the long run, that's worth more to them than the cost of the phone. You know, when companies like Sprint advertise, they often measure the effectiveness of their advertising in the cost per acquisition, how much it costs them to get a new customer. Because a new customer is worth lots of money to them. Most customers probably stay several years. They pay $80 a month for several years. That adds up. So it's not unusual for them to see cost per acquisition, cost per customer sign-up costs of hundreds of dollars. You know, when they buy advertising, that's often what it is. We figure it's going to cost about $100 to get a new customer, but that's worth it. So remember that. You're worth something, a couple of $100 at least, especially since you're a longtime customer. You've bought other stuff from them. They see you as valuable. You know, the sad thing about smartphones is they don't last very long because they get beat up. They're in your pocket. They're in your, you know, briefcase. They get banged around. So a couple of years and out is not unusual. It's a shame, especially for a device that costs, as in the case of that Note 4, $500, $600, $700. That's a lot of money. This is the most expensive computer you own, probably the smartphone. Rick, Pleasant Hill, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Rick.
Hey, Leo. Got a problem.
Uh-oh.
Murphy's Law, you know, if it can happen, it's going to.
Yes. Nine times out of ten, the toast lands butter side down.
Yes. At our users group meeting the other night, we publicized it very well that we were having a shootout between Apple TV and Roku.
See, this is where I love users groups. By the way, big plug for the Diablo Valley Mac users group, which is a great user group. That's the kind of thing you learn.
Yeah, well...
Except...
We had a halfway demo. We did our great slideshow, all the features, consumer reports, reviews, and so forth, and had the projector set up with an HDMI cable. Plugged in the Apple TV, it worked very nicely. Plugged in my new Roku 4 that works very well at home, but got no signal. And I'm wondering if we were a victim of some kind of a DRM scheme. And if so, is it true that if you run an HDMI with DRM on it through an HDMI splitter, that washes that off?
Oh, were you splitting it?
No, we weren't. But I had read on a geek site that if you run such a signal through a splitter, that it will remove the DRM.
Yeah, depends on the splitter. What they're talking about, this isn't always the case. What they're talking about is that some splitters, mostly sold from nameless Chinese companies, without billing it, have copy protection removal in it. We've found some that do, just by chance. They can't say so, or they wouldn't be importable into the U.S. They'd be blocked at the border. But okay. They know that that's desirable, so they just put it in there. But you can't go on to Amazon and find one that does that because it can't say that. So you're taking a chance. You may find some splitters do. We've actually found quite a few of our splitters will defeat HDCP. Yeah. I don't know if it's HDCP because Apple TV has HDCP built into it. And it worked with that exact same setup. I think it's more likely HDMI handshaking, which is a nightmare. But that's in a way, you kind of the shootout Apple TV won for that reason. If nothing else, it worked seamlessly, and your Roku would not. And I love my Roku. I have a Roku 4 at home.
Yeah, it's terrific.
And when you
it.
Brought it home, it worked fine?
Yeah. Weird. I'm watching you on it now.
Weird. I don't this is why I hate copy protection. Because it's
almost like the old days of SCSI, just so much voodoo, huh?
Yeah. So I don't know the answer. Let's open it up to our vast listening audience. Maybe somebody will call in or write a comment on the website, techguylabs.com. We'll keep researching. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hey, our show today brought to you by Audible. If you're blind or you have poor sight, Audible is a lifesaver. But frankly, I don't read books anymore. I love to listen. I was talking about my dad, 83. He still likes physical books, but my mom, also 83, loves Audible. The reason is she can listen. I can listen. She's listening while she's knitting. I'm listening while I'm walking to work in the car, working out at the gym, walking the dog, doing the dishes. I have Audible coming through my Amazon Echo. Yesterday, I'm cooking dinner, making a nice salmon and some broccolini, and I'm listening to my book while I'm doing it. It's wonderful. Audible has over 200,000 books now, a huge selection, 250,000 downloadable books, performances, comedy, college lectures too, by the way. I really want to emphasize it is a great way to learn. They have the entire Great Courses series. These are college lectures by some of the best lecturers in the world. And you're listening to them. And so if you like to learn, what a great way to learn. Normally the Great Courses are very expensive. The fact that I can have these on my Audible subscription blows my mind. And just go to Audible and browse around. You'll see this is such an amazing resource. Right now, what am I listening to? I'm listening... On the way in, I was listening to As You Wish, which is Cary Elwes story of the making of the Princess Bride movie. It's wonderful. The new Stephen King, if you like scary, is there. Every novel, every bestseller comes out on audio at audible.com. Day and date, the book comes out. So you always have access to the best. I'm going to get you your first book free. So here's the deal. Go to audiblepodcast.com/techguy, and you can get your first book free. You'll be signing up for the Gold account. That's a book a month. You also get the Daily Digest of the Wall Street Journal or the New York Times, so you get your news, too. Readers are phenomenally good. I just finished this Neal Stephenson book, Seven Eves. Listen to the reader.
If Izzy got hit by a rock of any size, it was all over.
Izzy, by the way, is the International Space Station.
There really was no point in talking about it.
You listen to these books and they come alive. It's like a movie in your mind. I want you to go to audiblepodcast.com/techguy. Get your first book. I'm a big fan of the Jack Aubrey. I have all of them. The Aubrey Maturin series, starting with Master and Commander. Patrick Tull narrates these. He's so good.
Patrick O'Brien.
He's so good. I love these. They're so good.
And now, Master and Commander.
Oh, makes me want to listen. Audiblepodcast.com/techguy. Your first book's free. Cancel anytime in that first 30 days. The book will be yours to keep forever. Audiblepodcast.com/techguy. Make sure you use that address so they know you heard it on the Tech Guy show. And we thank Audible for their great support of all of our shows. By the way, offers available in the U.S. and Canada. Ooh, the Doomsday Book. That'd be interesting to listen to. Oh, it's a novel about it. Oh, cool. I love her. Connie Willis is great. Add that to my wish list. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smart watches, virtual reality, 8888 Ask Leo. That's the number, 888. 827-5536, toll-free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. If you're outside that area, we have a lot of listeners on the internet. Just use Skype out. You should be able to reach us just fine. Here's the most important thing. Remember the website, techguylabs.com. It sounds like we're kind of doing experiments there. We're not. That's just the name. It's really just a normal website. No sign-up needed. No, we don't want your email address or any of that stuff. Just... you can visit it, click on links. We have the site is divided up into shows, show by show. Then each show is hour by hour. And each hour is call by call or segment by segment. So it's very easy to kind of drill down to where you want to be. And your comments are really welcome. We want to, you know, if you have a better way or a suggestion, somebody in the chat room was pointing out that there's a free downloadable program from Paragon that lets you read. And is it less Windows read Mac or Mac read Windows? I think it's Mac read Windows formats or hard drive formats. That kind of thing. Put those in the show notes. That's what those comments are for. It's great. And as time goes by and there's lots of information there, we have a search utility. You can find it. And I really want that website to be a resource for anybody who has a question. The kinds of questions we answer on this show, they can go there. They can find it. You can see video and audio of the show from previous episodes. It's all there. TechGuyLabs.com. JR is in L.A. Hi, JR. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo. How's it going?
It's great. How are you?
Doing all right. Actually, I called up because earlier you were talking about VR.
Mm-hmm.
Specifically, you touched on and you actually hit kind of a common misconception about PSVR.
Okay. I've played with the PlayStation VR. I love it. Very excited about it, actually.
I've been developing for it for the last 2 years.
Fantastic. So what are you working on?
I can't announce it yet.
Uh-huh.
We did not announce it E3, but later this year it will be announced.
Well, correct me. If I said anything wrong about it, I'd love to get corrected.
Well, the thing is, you hit on a thing that started with one anonymous person saying things, and a lot of tech press eventually turned into you need the new PlayStation to actually be able to use VR.
Oh, no. I was using it on a standard PS4. Absolutely. Works fine with the PS4. Yeah.
You know, it sounds like you were saying, maybe the other one. It's like, no, it's meant for the for the original PlayStation.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, in fact, Sony very interestingly did not announce an updated PlayStation, the rumored 4.5 at E3, did they? I don't think they did.
No, they did not. The focus was on PS4.
Yeah.
Or not PS4, PSVR.
No, and what's really interesting about PSVR is it's the lowest cost alternative. So if you already have a PS4, they're going to have one package that includes the Move paddles, the handheld Move devices, plus the visor and the camera. That'll be one package, but you may already have the camera. You may already have the Move, and so you can just get the visor. But I know I played a game, a demo game that I'm sure you've played as well. That was just great, and to me, that's the VR I'm bringing home. I own a Vive and a Rift. We have them here at the studio, but it takes a very high-end PC to do it, and in the case of the Vive, a lot of space. I think the PS4 is going to be the PlayStation VR is going to be really, really exciting. They say by the end of the year, 60 titles that work with it, which is also remarkable. That's one of the problems right now is the dearth of titles for the Oculus and the Vive.
Well, I mean, here's the thing. Most people don't know PSVR has been in development for 7 years.
Wow, I did not know that. That's amazing. Yeah.
They've been very serious about it. It's been, how can we make it affordable? And most importantly, you plug it in and it works.
Yeah, well, I apologize thank you for correcting me if I gave the wrong impression. I know it works with the existing PS4 because that's what I'm going to use it with, and that's what we used it with when I did the demo here in the studio. If you haven't seen it in action, we actually did a show, our triangulation show, featuring the PS VR a couple of weeks ago, and boy, that was an eye opener for me. Let me ask you this, because you're probably wearing that headset a lot.
Yeah.
Do you have any nausea issues? Are you able to wear it for extended periods of time without getting disoriented, that kind of thing?
I can wear it for extremely extended periods. And the other thing is my group has done a ton of work on dealing with VR discomfort.
Yeah.
And we've made a game that people thought, oh, you can't do it in VR. Oh, my God, you're doing it in VR.
Yeah. So there are ways to... get around the nausea problem?
For most people. The thing is, 10 to 15% of the global population just won't be able to. Good way of looking at it is a lot of those issues come from expectations of input on the body you don't have. And so you start getting divided by zero errors in the brain.
That's a good way to... That's a programmer way to put it, but that's a good way to put it. I like it.
It's like... Stop it. This isn't right. I'm not getting things. There's something wrong here. There's something wrong with the body. Stop.
And that number that you just reported matches quite well with the number that I had heard from Air Force studies, that about 10 to 15% would not only suffer nausea, but longer-term disorientation that might last as long as 24 hours. And this was not the VR that we're talking about today, but the even higher-quality military trainers that they were using for pilots. So I think that sounds about right. Now, my question is, how well is a technology going to do if 10 to 15% of its prospective customers get sick when they use it? And unfortunately, you don't know ahead of time if you're one of them.
Well, the thing is, Sony announced and it went live yesterday is they've just put up a bunch of demo kiosks for people, and they also have their what I call battle van, transporting that great stuff to come in and sit down and play. So,
yeah, I would recommend everybody try it. Yeah, try before you buy. And I know that, GameStop and other places that sell this kind of stuff will absolutely have demos. And I would strongly recommend that you try it for a while before you say you're going to buy it. I've had some nausea issues in some cases, but I was able to do the PlayStation VR for at least 5 minutes without any problem. They had to cut me off at 5 minutes because they wanted to move on. I loved it. We tried it on Rick Marks, the guy in charge of VR PlayStation, brought it by.
Oh, no, I know Richard very well.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. May 16th. It's a triangulation episode 250. We'll put a link in our show notes if you'd like to hear more about it and watch it. And I have to say, I had a blast. You've probably played it, the one where you're driving along in a car and you got a guy who looks like Jason Statham sitting next to you, and you're shooting Russian bad guys, and it was so much fun.
The Getaway is a ton of fun.
Is that what it's called, The Getaway?
Yep.
Yeah. I can't wait. I'm going to be first in line to get this thing. Absolutely. I think it's going to be a really fantastic product. So thank you for setting the record straight. And I apologize if I gave the misapprehension that you needed a updated PlayStation, because it's going to work with all PS4s on the market today.
Yeah.
You will want the camera, the Move, and the visor, so you'll have to get a package. I'm hoping they'll offer a package for all the pieces, including the PS4. Even with that included, I think it would still be less than getting a high-end PC. I know it would be a high-end PC and an Oculus Rift or a Vive. It's going to be the least expensive way to get into this. Hey, thank you for the call. I appreciate it. When's your title coming out?
Right now, tentatively, early next year.
JR, will you call me back when it comes out and we can talk? We don't have to be secretive. We can talk about it.
Yeah, I'll call you once you're officially announced.
That would be wonderful. I'd love to talk to you about it and the ins and outs of developing for it and so forth.
Okay, cool.
Thank you, JR. Nice. See, one of the nice things about this show, we have a great audience that's doing very interesting things. And I don't get away with anything. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Details, by the way, at techguylabs.com. I know I look like a dork doing it, but it was so much fun. So much fun. So you use the Move handles as your hands. And that's another advantage that they're going to have, is they have these inexpensive Move paddles that, the Oculus doesn't even have paddles yet. They will, but they don't have them yet. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888, Ask Leo. Jim is next in Gaithersburg, Maryland. Hey, Jim.
Hi, Leo.
Welcome to the show.
Well, thank you. I'm not sure there's a good segue going from your topic there to my topic.
Oh, it doesn't matter. We don't really do segues here. We just talk about tech.
Well, let me explain why I'm calling. Right. I'm legally blind, so I have a hard time being able to see things.
Mm-hmm.
I found out a couple years ago about internet radios, and I bought, I bought one about 2 years ago, and then I bought a second one a few months ago.
Yeah.
And I don't quite understand what's going on, and when I tuned in, first thing I found out, there's a delay between the actual show.
That's right.
Yeah, that's one thing. But then the other thing that's driving me nuts is... frequently, the signal just cuts out and it goes back to buffering.
Right.
That's what someone tells me.
That's what it's doing, yep.
Yeah, and then, sometimes it does that frequently. And
so let me kind of explain what's going on. Internet radio, whether it's a physical box that you got from C. Crane or Grace or wherever you got your internet radio.
I got it from Grace.
Grace, I have a Grace radio. I love them. It's kind of like a computer. Basically, it's a computer that's doing the same thing you would do if you used your web browser to listen to the radio on your computer. What it's doing is it's going to an internet address, so the radio has to be attached to your Wi-Fi or plugged into the Ethernet. Pretty typically, it's wireless.
Yeah, that's how mine is.
Yeah, so the first thing you did when you first got it, you configured it, put your wireless password and your wireless SSID, your ID for your wireless access point, into the radio. It joined it. Usually when you first get one, it'll say, oh, I got to update. It'll download an update.
Sure.
And then if you have most of these, I know the Grace does, will let you use a website to pick stations, because there are tens of thousands of internet radio stations. They're kind of an unlimited number of internet radio stations.
Right, and it did that. And I have 10 stations that I have the Mondo, which has like...
That's what I have too. I love the Mondo, yeah.
Oh, yeah, I do too.
Yeah.
So I'm using all 10 buttons, or 5 buttons, but with the other buttons.
So just like a TV, just like a car radio, you've got programmed punch buttons.
Right, and for me, we're not being able to see... It's wonderful. All I have to do is remember what position various stations are.
Perfect. So what it's doing is the first time you load up a station, you push that, you turn it on, you push that button,
is it goes out and it does the first buffer. So here's the kind of the behind the scenes. You need to understand. It'll help you understand what's going on with the radio.
Okay.
For streaming content, when you load a web page, if the bottom of the page comes in first, you just paint the bottom of the page and then the top page. And by the time everything's loaded, you'll have a whole page. It doesn't really matter what order it comes in. But when you're talking about audio and video, it matters very much. If I started talking backwards in ways that the words didn't attach, even if in your head later you could put it all into a sentence, it would be very confusing. So with the packets of data that are arriving for streaming, it's very important that they come in order and you don't miss any, because if you miss one, that you're going to have drop like that. So the way the internet radio or any internet streaming device, your computer works the same way, works is it'll get ahead. In other words, it won't start right away. It'll fill up a buffer, typically 30 seconds of data, and then start playing. That buffer allows it, if a packet comes late, out of order, or missing, it loses some of the buffer. It can continue to play until that late packet arrives. Oh, here, quick, quick, quick. And then it can play the rest. So that 30 seconds gets depleted every time there's an error, whether it's a packet missing, out of order, or late. It'll deplete the buffer. And at some point, if your internet connection isn't perfect, the buffer goes away. The signal must stop, rebuffer for 30 seconds, and go on its merry way. That's to prevent having a signal that's really pretty like chop like that, or coming out of order. You've heard that, of course.
Yeah, of course.
So that's what buffering is designed to eliminate. It's a kind of annoying. It also means that if you're listening to live radio, it's at least 30 seconds behind. Now, I have to tell you, radio's behind anyway. If you're listening to this show, that's why we always say when you get on the phone, turn down your radio, because of digital delays in our signal, so that we can dump it out if somebody says a bad word. We're 40 seconds behind what you're hearing. So I'll say something, and you won't hear it on the radio for 40 seconds.
Okay.
So we're already 40 seconds behind. Then add 30 seconds of buffering, and what you're hearing on a quote-unquote live broadcast is a minute or two old. That's not a problem unless you're on a phone call. That's why we say turn down your radio and listen to the phone, because that's in real time.
Right. Well, like when I'm listening to the radio, I know there has to be, I'm probably not using the right word, but there has to be a connection between the radio and the router.
Yeah.
And another connection between the router and the modem. Another one between the modem and the internet.
Exactly right.
So when this thing's cutting out like it does, is there any way to know whether my radio's not working or whether?
No, it's not. Almost always, it's not the radio. It's the internet isn't fast enough to keep up. So by the way, you'll notice longer and more buffering the higher quality the audio. Now, you don't really control that on a Grace or typical internet radios. You just get whatever signal there is.
Uh-huh.
For instance, BBC might send out a 64 or 128 kilobit stream. That high quality stream is going to sound better, but it's going to buffer more and it's going to have problems more. So it's your internet not keeping up with the audio, or your internet not reliably keeping up. So one thing to try is to put the radio closer to your wireless access point. You will probably experience less buffering.
Yeah, this past Christmas, my wife gave me a router extension.
Mm-hmm. That'll help.
I moved out. That works pretty good, too.
Yeah, that'll help.
So the thing cut out.
The problem with Wi-Fi is the greater the distance from the access point, the weaker the signal, the slower the bandwidth.
I see.
So you don't get the full bandwidth unless you're sitting next to the access point. That's why, for instance, when we have Skype callers on a lot of our shows, we tell them you can't use Wi-Fi. You must be physically plugged into your router. That makes a huge difference.
Okay.
So if you plugged your Grace radios do have an Ethernet jack, I think. If you plugged that into your router, you wouldn't see nearly as many of these buffering pauses.
Okay.
You understand?
Yeah, that makes sense.
It's just the way the internet is. If you think, you're not listening over the air through a tower sending signal. There's never been any buffering with broadcast, with terrestrial radio, because it's instant. It's speed of light, and it doesn't lose packets. But this is the internet, and the internet is a very different beast. Your signal from that radio station is going through 7, 8, 9, 10 hops. That's 10 different servers getting to you, then through your internet service provider, and then through your access point. And you nailed it, by the way. You got exactly the chain. It's the modem to the access point to your radio. And yeah, at any one of those points, it can slow down enough or lose a packet, for instance, and cause the buffering. It's not your radio, in other words. Your radio is doing the best it can with a system that was never designed to do what it's doing, to be honest. It's amazing it works at all. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, and Bob is on the line from La Habra, California. Hey, Bob, welcome.
Hey, thank you, Leo.
Thanks for calling.
Leo, I know you're the tech guy. I am the bad guy.
Uh-oh, what'd you do?
I didn't do anything. I'm just, the only thing I've been accused of is being computer illiterate.
Nothing wrong with that.
Well, the last time I had computer classes was in college.
I don't judge somebody for not being interested in technology, not understanding technology. This is something that's fun. You bad person, you don't know badminton? What's wrong with you? There's no necessity at this point for knowing about it. So it's okay. But you want to learn about badminton? I'm your guy.
I do.
Okay.
Last time... You know, I was even around a computer was in college, and it was a half football field.
Yeah,
long.
I didn't get into technology in college yet because I didn't want to do the punch card thing and beg people to let me have 1 minute of their computer time in the basement. You know, I mean, that's crazy. So you're right. But now you can own in your pocket a computer that's more powerful than that old thing.
Yeah, I know. Well, I'm tired of having my college daughter harassed me for not having one.
Oh, kids today, they're so bigeted. I
wanted to get your opinion on computers, you know.
Here's what I would say. If this is your first computer, do not get a Windows computer or a Mac computer. Those are general purpose devices designed to do everything from launch rockets to edit movies to write your great American novel. And because they're general purpose, they're more complex, they're more prone to failure, and they're much less secure than something that does everything you're going to want it to do, which is browse the internet, buy things online, send emails to your daughter, receive emails from your daughter, look at pictures of your kids. The kinds of things you want to do, you don't need a general purpose computer for. So okay, there's two directions I point people to in this case. And they depend on whether you want a keyboard or not. In my opinion, you should have a keyboard. And for that reason, I say get a Chromebook.
Chromebook?
Chromebook. Does that ring a bell?
No.
They're very
inexpensive. I told you I know nothing.
No, that's fine. They're very inexpensive. We're starting at $150 to up to about $500. They're very...
Okay, if I... Excuse me, I didn't mean to...
No, quite all right. Go ahead.
If I use it, I don't really need a desktop. Well, I do need a desktop. That's what I want. But with about a 17-inch screen.
So then you're going to, for that.
Portable?
Yeah. So most Chromebooks are like laptops. So okay, what you're going to want is a Chrome box, which they're, box? And they're Chrome. So the operating system, not Mac, not Windows, but Chrome OS. Operating system, Chrome OS. It's from Google, and they make all-in-ones with large screens that are look just like an iMac, for instance, an all-in-one computer, but they're less expensive, they're much more secure, and they'll do everything that you want it to do. So I would say you're going to look for, I'll tell you a brand if you want.
Sure.
I'm going to look up which one. Who makes the all-in-ones? I'm thinking it's Asus, but let me look up all-in-one Chrome OS and see which one. Yeah, it's Acer. It's called the Acer Chrome Base.
Okay.
And it is 24 inches, which is even bigger than you were talking about, but you're going to like how big it is. It's very easy. It's very powerful, and get ready for this. This big 24-inch computer is $300.
Oh, neat. I was looking at spending like $500.
No, you don't need to. And I think you'll be so much happier if you, first of all, no security issues. You don't need an antivirus. You don't have to worry about all of the stuff you hear on this show and other shows about ransomware. You don't have to worry about that. You will need internet access. Do you have internet access at home? Probably not.
No, I don't. Yeah. Who do you recommend for that and anything else I would need?
So you're going to be able to get internet access from either your phone company or your cable company. We have a sponsor. I'll give them a plug, DSL Extreme. They're very inexpensive. They give you DSL. It comes in over your phone line. And they're inexpensive. They'll work great with this Chrome base. That's what this one's called, the LG Chrome base. Acer also makes one.
I can't pick them up on the internet. I would need to get the...
You can, but you...
I have is, just a regular...
Do you have a cable subscription right now? Do you have a cable provider?
No.
Okay.
No, I just get it off air.
Yeah, I think the cheapest way for you to go would be phone-based. You do have a phone, I presume.
Yeah.
Yeah. Call either your phone company or DSL Extreme. I'll give you three names. Or SonicNet. I think Sonic's available in La Habra. Those are three. So whoever your phone company is, AT&T or Frontier, I'm not sure who your phone company is. But your phone company, Sonic.net or DSL Extreme. Any of those three, you're going to get DSL. They'll put a box in your house. Tell them you want them to install it. And you want Wi-Fi because that's wireless. Although with this, you don't really need wireless as long as you can be near wherever it is that you want to... have the computer near the phone, in other words.
Access it.
Yeah, because it's going to plug in. This is, I think, for you, a great choice. Easy to see, nice keyboard and mouse. You can't break it, which is going to, that's going to be a reassuring.
That's a good thing to know.
Yeah.
I break a lot of stuff.
You can't break this. If ever something doesn't work right, Chromebooks, Chrome OS machines have something called Power Wash, which you press a button and it goes back to the way it was. The only negative is you have to have internet access, but that would be true of any computer because you want to send emails to your daughter at college.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Your daughter could probably help you with this. Don't let her talk you into a Mac or a Windows PC, though. That's way overkill.
Hey, I just had to buy her Apple Macintosh, which cost me a arm and a leg.
Yeah.
To keep her in college.
So I love Macs, and I think Macs are great, but for most people, they're overkill. You don't need it, and this will cost a tenth of what a similar Mac would. So Acer and LG both make all-in-one Chrome bases. Take a look at the Acer Chrome base. 24 inches. It's big. It's 1080p. It's beautiful. I know you don't care about any of these things. It's very affordable. I think it's an excellent choice. I think you're going to be very happy. Yep.
Well, I appreciate that. Hey, I appreciate the fact your dad and mom are 83.
I appreciate that, too, because it bodes well for me.
Yeah. I still have a mother who's alive. She's 92.
Oh, isn't that sweet? Isn't that wonderful? Well, cherish her.
Still, right? She's still spicy as all.
My mom's pretty.
On my fanny when I do anything.
It sounds like my mom. She's pretty spicy too. Yeah, tell your daughter you want an Acer, A-C-E-R, Chrome base 24,
okay.
And say, and help me get this and set up the internet, and then I will send you emails, and you will be happy. You will be happy too because this is so much easier to use. I think it's the best way to go. I'm glad I could get one more person. I don't know why we've been selling for years these complex systems. You hear people call and say, I can't, it doesn't work, it doesn't do this. Doesn't do that. This is so much simpler and so much more affordable. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. And we don't have to tell anybody, the secret is Linux. Inches, 1080p, keyboard, mouse, everything you need. Beautiful screen. It's got a webcam so he can Skype.
It's got music. It tilts. And once they put Android on these things, oh, my God. Oh, this has touch, too, which is nice. Hey, our show today brought to you by Wealthfront. If you've got investments, if you've got to save, if you're saving up for retirement, for college, college kids are expensive. You better start saving. If you've got long-term investments of any kind, you probably are thinking about, well, how do I manage that? Do I pay a broker 1, 2, 3% of what I earn every year? And how good is that broker going to be? Or do I do it myself? Well, as smart as I am, as smart as you are, you still don't want to do it yourself. What you want to do is this, wealthfront.com/tech guy. For 0.25% a year, they will manage and really manage day in, day out your investments using computer technology. This is a program that does sophisticated things like rebalancing and tax loss harvesting that I guarantee you your high-priced stock advisor's not doing. It is an amazing and no additional costs, no transaction fees or anything, just 0.25%. In fact, I got a deal for you. It costs $500 to start. For your first $15,000, as long as you go to wealthfront.com/tech guy, there'll be no charge at all. Just to get you started, get your nest egg going. Read up on it. Go to wealthfront.com/tech guy and read up on how they're doing this, on who's involved, and some of the best brains in technology and investment. People like Burton Malkiel, Charles D. Ellis, Avery Moon. These are really smart people. And you use their dashboard, you can see exactly what they're doing. If you go to wealthfront.com/tech guy right now, you can get a sample portfolio based on just a few questions. And by the way, that's one of the secret sauces. They just ask you a few questions to get a sense of your time frame, your risk aversion, and they'll design a portfolio for you. They'll even review your existing portfolio to see if you're paying too much in fees. And all of that is at no cost at all. For retirement, for non-retirement, individual, joint, trusts even, what a great way to do it. It's easy, it's fast, it's Wealthfront. Wealthfront.com/tech guy. At least do yourself a favor, read up about it today. Ladies and gentlemen, direct from Gizneyland, it's time for The Giz Whiz, Dick D. Bartolo, Mad's maddest writer.
Yes.
He's famous for being geeky. I've been reading him in Mad Magazine for decades, but it turns out he also has lots of good gadgets. Hey, Dickie D.
How are you, Leo?
I'm great.
To see you again. Good. Oh, we're almost dressed alike.
Yeah, well,
I dress for radio.
I dress for radio, too, which is why we're both wearing jammies right now.
Jammies, yes, exactly. Like over at ABC, no one is dressed from the waist down because...
Why bother?
On the news, that's all you see is the top half.
Why bother?
No, I have a fun gadget. Oh, it was about 2 years ago, I got my first Cobra jump pack. Now, the jump pack is a little guy, like size of a paperback book, with a powerful lithium battery. And I'll never forget, the first time I saw it, I'm walking down the aisle at a trade show. And I said to the man, "Sir, why are there jumper cables next to your phone charger?" And he said, "Because this can charge your phone and start your car if it has a dead." I know. So that's what I said. I said, "What are you kidding me?" And he said, "No." I said, "Well, I have a boat, 225 horsepower, four stroke." He said, "Oh, that'll start that."
What?
I know. I said, "Well, you know what? Can I try one?" So they sent me one. I unplugged my boat so the auto charger wouldn't charge the battery. Went down a week later, battery was dead. Clicked this guy on, turned the key once. My Yamaha 225 started right up. But now... last month, they introduced Jump Pack XL.
Ooh.
So Jump Pack XL can now start small trucks, vans. And what's neat about this, Leo, is you charge it once. It can start a car up to three times without recharging. But the thing is, once your car starts, you can recharge it again from your cigarette lighter or the included AC adapter. There's a built-in flashlight. And the price of the new one was the price of what the original one. The original one is dropped down now to like $90, and the new one is $129. And it is the Cobra Jump Pack XL or the CPP 12,000. And it comes with those little mini jumper cables, and it is really, really neat.
Now, how do I connect those jumper cables to my phone?
You don't know this, but at the bottom of your phone, yeah, a tiny little negative, and you call yourself the tech guy.
Yeah. No, it has also a USB connection.
Yes, USB out. USB.
Actually, it's got like 11,000.
11,100. Yes,
milliamp hours. Right. So this is enough to charge and recharge my phone many times. That's great.
Yeah, and start your small truck on a diesel engine, and yeah, it's really neat.
Wow, wow. All right, there you go. That's the Cobra Jump Pack XL.
And if you just have a regular car and you know you're never going to need it for anything else, just look for the Cobra Jump Pack without XL and. Way cheap, probably $50 cheaper.
You'll find out about that and everything else at Dick's site, GizWiz, GizWiz.biz. You can click the Tech Guy button and you'll take it to the Tech Guy section. But there's lots of other things going on. If you browse around, you might be surprised. There's Dick on ABC's World News Now. There's a picture of Dick with a Santa hat on. I don't know why. But anyway, you can also see What the Heck Is It, which is a great contest and a chance for you to win an autographed copy of Mad Magazine. All you have to do is identify a close-up picture of this. You've got until the end of the month to do that, though, right?
Till the end of June.
Well, that's obvious.
Well, I'll tell you.
What? Tell me. What is that, Dick? Tell me. It's a USB comb. It's obvious. And if you just the 12 magazines, autograph magazines for the right answer, but there's 24 for the best wrong answer. So give it a wrong answer, and you have a better chance of winning. I don't know. I don't understand the rules, but that's the way everything is in Gizwiz Land.
What me worry logic.
Just a little upside down.
Yeah, world.
You should also watch Dick's podcast nominated for the Podcast Award of the Year for Technology. If you go to gizwiz.tv, you can see that. And it's too late to vote, but we're going to find out what the results are next week. And yep. I'm crossing my fingers for you.
Thank you, sir. Well, you've won so many that they don't even let you in anymore.
They literally got a letter saying, yeah, you can't win anymore. we're not even going to let people nominate. It's like,
because you're so popular, you automatically win.
I think Meryl Streep should get that letter, too. Well, yeah, you can't win any more Oscars. You got enough.
Oh, no, you know, when you put it that way, you're absolutely right.
Yeah.
You're absolutely right.
No, yeah, well, it's okay. I understand.
No, it's not okay. I mean, I actually wrote you in I did a write-in vote, even though there was no place to do that.
Just wrote it on the screen?
I just wrote it right on the screen.
Thank you, Dick.
Okay.
Gizwiz.biz, Dickie D. We'll see you next week. Thank you for joining us. Always a pleasure.
See you later.
Last call of the day, I think Sandra in Corona, California. Hi, Sandra.
Hello.
Sandra, are you there?
Hey, how you doing?
Hey, I'm great. Sorry. Thanks for keeping us, being very patient, keeping the faith.
Oh, I enjoy the program.
Thank you.
Okay, so I'm the original klutz, all right?
Uh-oh.
And, oh, I know.
I know.
My husband is like, you know, if he had a thermometer, you could see the mercury at the very top, you know.
Oh, now don't beat yourself up. What happened?
Well, my iPhone 6 Plus went flying out of my hand, and, of course, the screen broke.
Of course.
Into a million pieces.
And, by the way, you could have the best case in the world, but that glass screen, if something hits it just right, it's going to break no matter what.
Oh, I am a pro at this.
Yeah.
So I took it to my local Staples and I said, please put a new screen on here. And so he goes, okay. And he puts the screen on. And then when I get home, I realize that Siri is not working.
Right.
And my speaker is not working, which is why you couldn't hear me right away.
Right.
And so when I go back, I don't, you know, how do I tell him this is your fault, you know? I
mean, it is. You say, this is your fault. Now, what he's going to say is, well, you didn't tell me to replace that stuff, too. That's the problem with third party. Now, this is a really complicated political question. I believe that when you own hardware, you have something called the right to repair. That, in other words, you should be able to go to anyone and get it fixed. Apple believes, and this is why, by the way, that only Apple should be allowed to repair phones. So they don't give the information, the parts, the tools needed for third parties to do the right job. They keep them to themselves. And they're only allowing Staples to do it because they don't have any other choice. They would like, in fact, they are lobbying hard to make sure that to put these guys out of business. They really want to own the repair and nobody else. However, had you brought it back to Apple, you would have gotten it repaired properly, and this is kind of the issue. At this point, if you bring it to Apple, they're going to say, well, somebody else fixed this, didn't they? And they're going to say, sorry, you're out of luck. You want to buy a new phone? So your only option is to bring it back to Staples and keep bugging them until you get it fixed properly. Siri, I'm not sure why Siri stopped working. It might be related to the speaker. It might be that the microphone is no longer working as well as the speaker. The thumbprint reader will not work either because Apple makes sure of that. This is a known thing. So when you get a third-party repair, especially on the newest iPhones, be prepared. Apple really wants to do it themselves. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy Show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, it's just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows on the Netcast Network. It's called TWIT, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, security on Security Now. I mean, I can go on and on and on. You even get your daily dose of tech news with Tech News Today. And, of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guy show. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time.